Oh, you know, I got to start this off by saying Bob and I just watched Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen movie. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. I swear. It's like now I have a new appreciation for Queen. But not only do I have a new appreciation for them, I completely love Freddie Mercury. I love the actor who played him. He did such a fantastic job. And
Remy.
Yeah. And
Remy.
He's just sorry. He was. Oh, my God. I mean, he had this like way about him that I automatically just I fell in love with him. He was so sweet. And he, you know, I mean, I really think that he was channeling Freddie Mercury.
It was transcendent.
Oh, my God.
They were all so, so freaking dead
on. Music.
Yeah.
I mean, and I looked it up. It wasn't he was doing some lip syncing, but from what I understood, it was somebody else who was doing the singing, but it was kind of an amalgamation of both, like, I think he and somebody else. But whether it was him or not, I'm not sure. But either way, I mean, whoever was doing the singing was insane. I mean, they sounded just like him. I think the only thing that I noticed was Freddie Mercury has more range and can go higher, but so close. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know much about his life. I knew that he died of AIDS, and I knew that he was gay. And I vaguely remember some issue, you know, with the fact that he was gay. I grew up, my mother and I were living in California when I was 10, and we got a roommate who was gay. And that was my first introduction to gay people. And it was great because this guy was so so cool and so awesome. And I just was able to understand that someone could be gay and it was no big fucking deal. It wasn't an issue. And so I know that, you know, this whenever it was brought up that he was gay, I didn't understand what's the big deal. Like, who cares? You know, who cares if he's gay? He's got this amazing voice. And he just, you know, and it was kind of a sad film because even though he had all the success and he had great, you know, highs in his life, I mean, he was a gay man who really wasn't allowed to be himself. And then he fucking dies of AIDS. And it's like, God, this is so sad.
That was horrifying. It was so sad. And I love Queen, loved Queen from a young age. I had friends when I was in middle school who had older brothers and sisters who turned me on to Queen. And then, you know, the Flash Gordon movie came out. So we jumped on, my brother and I jumped on that bandwagon, but we knew A Night at the Opera from beginning to end, every song on that album. And we became obsessed with Queen. And when this movie came out, I was like, the actors, all of them, the dude that played John Deacon on bass had the body movements down to perfection.
Yeah.
The Brian May guy was freaking Brian May.
Yeah. Like he really was.
Oh my God. They were all so good. But it just like music, you know, I sing in a band and we do our own rocked up version of Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like the way, like his art and his, like his being was truly like otherworldly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there was something special coming through him that he shared with us. That makes me and makes people who love Queen and people who saw that movie feel a certain way. Like I went and saw that in a Dolby cinema with my son. We got to screen it. And I was like, he loves the music. I mean, my son's 14 years old. He wasn't, you know, it touches people in a way that's like, holy shit. This gives me a reason to like, just get through another day sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then watching Rami Malek,
oh my God,
be Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
They reenacted the Live Aid experience.
Oh my God, I know.
Oh my God.
I got chills.
We watched it on, we went and watched it. He had every movement down to perfection. It was crazy. I just sent you a picture of myself at Halloween because I was Freddie Mercury from Live Aid.
You're so awesome.
And, like,
oh my God, you're awesome.
I don't even,
Bob just saw it.
Did you just show it to Bob? Yeah. Is that the best?
So awesome.
The mustache was a little off, but, yeah. And my boobs are bigger, but, but I got to tell you guys, like, honestly, if it wasn't for this is going to sound so lame and sad, but there are certain days these last couple years where I have to find stuff. Like when I wrote that, that Willow Grove spot about a Trump indictment, yeah, or just lathering my skin with some lotion that smells good. Like, honestly, I'll take anything.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true.
And I'll watch Bohemian Rhapsody a fifth fucking time because I know it's going to make me feel good. We have, you know, like, we've got to find stuff that takes us outside, yeah, of the doom and gloom.
Absolutely.
So anyway,
you know, another thing, I don't know if you have been watching or have any familiarity with the television show Fargo.
No, but I know you love it.
Yeah. I mean, we just watched the first season, which is interesting because it doesn't really have much to do with the movie, except for that it's in the same universe. And there are references to the movie. And it's kind of fun because we watched the movie like the Sunday before we started watching the show. So the movie was fresh. And there are little references that if you're not really paying attention, you might miss. And if you do miss it, the show is still great. The writing is very tight. The characters are very strong. It's a really great show. Billy Bob Thornton is on it. Keith Carradine.
Keith Carradine.
He's great. Then what's the guy?
Martin Freeman.
Huh? Martin Freeman.
Oh, my God. I love Martin Freeman.
And then what's his name? Tom Hanks' son. What's his name?
Colin Hanks.
Oh, and Oliver Platt is on it. And what's really great about this show, I'm kind of bummed because we just watched the last show of the first season, and now the second season is going to be completely different. It's going to be set at a different time. It's going to have different actors. So, I loved the people on the first season. And what I also love is that in the movie, the accents were pretty extreme. And in the show, I dare you to watch the show and not start talking in that like Minnesota Fargo accent. And they do it a little bit more subtle. And, you know, and it's all day long. Bob and I are talking. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's like you just kind of catch it. It's like this accent you kind of catch. But it's fantastic. Right now, I know it's on Hulu. We're watching it on Hulu. I think you have to buy it per episode on FX. But it's really fucking good. I mean, it's just it's stellar. I give it an A+.
Okay. At least I love it.
The first season is an A+. I'll get back to you on the second season.
Okay. This is perfect because I can now bide my time with something super entertaining until Game of Thrones comes back in April.
I'm serious. It's fucking great. It is so good. Yep. It is so good.
Did you guys watch Escape from Dannemora?
Yes. Loved.
The hell?
That was so good.
First of all, Paul Dano, so underrated as an actor. What a phenomenal actor. Patricia Arquette has always been, to me, ever since True Romance, I'm like, there is something super special about this person. And then, of course, Boyhood. And now this. And Benicio del Toro is also just like from another planet.
Yes. And I have a funny story about him, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, just keep go on about the show.
No, I just watched it. I'm so, you know,
remember
I
think it was the third episode, and I don't even remember what he did, but it was that thing where he was talking to whoever in the jail. Yeah, that thing.
Oh my God. That caused me to lose some sleep.
God, he's that fucking exact awesome. Scene.
Don't care anymore.
His choices are so unique and so awesome. And you know who directed that was Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Just fucking amazing.
The soundtrack on that was really good too.
Yes.
The
soundtrack was excellent. And Ben Stiller and Patricia Arquette worked together on a film, which I can never remember the name.
Flirting with Disaster.
Flirting with Disaster, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. God, I love that movie.
Which has Richard Jenkins and Josh Brolin and Taya Leone. And I swear that, and Mary Tyler Moore. Do these look like the breasts of a middle-aged woman?
And Lily George Tomlin Siegel? And Alan Alda.
Oh my God. That's like the best. That was the best final, you know, chapter in that movie when we discovered that those were the parents. Oh my God.
Oh God, they were so funny.
I'm going to watch that again tonight.
I know. I'm going to have to watch that. But my Benicio del Toro story is just dumb, but it's so me. I used to have this huge crush on him, just absolutely huge crush. And so I'm not going to say how, but I found an address and I do believe it was his address. So I wanted, you know, I told my girlfriend that I found his address, and she's like, because we were going to go out to dinner. And for some reason, I don't remember why, but I know why. Because we were going to go early because we were going to go see a band play. So we had dinner early. And then she says to me, like, you know, during that time we had about an hour and a half to kill before we had to get to the place with the band. And she's like, let's just go to Benicio's. And I'm like, no, we can't do that.
I have some breaking news. Uh-oh, I'm gonna break in here. CNN is reporting that the Mueller report is going to be released to Congress as soon as next week.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my fucking God!
I love it, Bob. This is my dream. I swear to God, I was like, I just need some breaking news today during this podcast.
I wish it was on the free show, but oh, my God.
Yeah, it's interesting. My only concern is that Bill Barr has rushed this out.
Interesting.
He just was sworn in, and now we're getting, suddenly. And in fact, Attorney General Bill Barr are the first four words of the CNN story. He's preparing to announce as early as next week the completion of Robert Mueller's Russia investigation, with plans for Barr to submit to Congress soon after a summary of Mueller's confidential report, according to people familiar with the plans.
Wow. Interesting.
So he's going to release a summary.
Right.
Submit to Congress
soon
after a summary. Weird. Well, I'm not overly concerned as to whether or not it's going to see the light of day. It's going to leak. It's going to come out.
Right.
They're not going to be able to stop it. So as long.
Okay. Well then, oh my God, I just opened up Twitter. So hold, please.
There you go.
I, you know, Glenn Kirshner, who we're talking to in a couple weeks, says, well, this is old though. So 3 hours ago, he said Bill Barr's appointment will prove to be one of Trump's worst miscalculations. Barr will protect the integrity and independence of the DOJ, will support Mueller's investigation, and will be instrumental in Trump's downfall. Hashtag justice is coming. So that was 3 hours ago. Asha Rangappa is already, you know, 2 minutes, managing expectations in light of Mueller's report being finalized next week. A reminder that it will likely include only criminal charges to pursue or decline. As I explained here, Congress needs to find a way to get the bigger counterintelligence story. And then she did an article on the Hill.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Renato says, that raises two obvious questions. Was Mueller's decision to conclude his investigation free from any pressure from Barr or any other Trump administration official? And two, what would be excluded from Barr's summary, he puts in quotes, to Congress, and how will they get access to what's missing? Interesting.
Oh, my God.
I know. This is like, okay, well, brace yourselves, because God only knows what's coming next, you know?
Well, and you know, Trump has been more unhinged, more unhinged relative to what, 2 weeks ago? When,
right, but you know, he is. He keeps unraveling.
He's unraveling. Roger Stone's going to jail tomorrow. That New York Times bombshell from last night. You know, if that man isn't changing a depend right now that's just filled with feces, I honestly don't know what his daily life must be like right now as he's anticipating. Yeah. You know, what does it mean? There's so much news for us to be processing at every turn. You know, technology, nuclear technology to the Saudis, so he and Jared make a couple bucks. Roger Stone's going to jail. Paul Manafort's going to die in jail. Michael Cohen is going to be back next week, hopefully, right? New York Times story, Mueller's report, Andrew McCabe on a freaking loop. Okay. Like I keep envisioning the movie Scanners when the one guy, Daryl Revick, can look at you and make your brain explode. Like I'm expecting that to happen on national television. He's going to come up to the podium and it's just going to be like,
Wow.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. This is like, in fact, and I'm going to get back to my Benicio story in a minute, but.
breaking news.
I know. My stalking Benicio story. But I've been lately, I mean, like in 2017 and in 2018, there was this like gung-ho, like, oh, my God, we're going to get him and justice is going to prevail. And look at Trump's going to go down. And 2019, I've got this whole different take. I'm like, really? Is anything going to happen? Are we ever going to see justice? Is Trump ever going to pay for anything? And so I'm kind of like spending my days trying to learn how to do my own podcast and writing, and I'm, even though I'm in the loop and I'm paying attention, I'm so fucking overwhelmed and I'm so like afraid that things aren't going to happen the way we want them to happen, that I'm just kind of trying to keep myself busy. You know, I mean, it's not that I'm not paying attention, because I am, but I know some of the details are lost on me because I'm kind of shutting out. I'm you know, until the big news drops, until we know what's the deal. Is Trump really going to have to pay? Is Don Jr. going to have to pay? I'm so nervous that they're not going to, you know, I just, I don't know how this is all going to go down. And the thing is it's like, we don't have a Republican Party that's going to hold him, that's going to make sure he's held accountable. They're not going to, if he gets impeached, they're not going to ask him to leave. He's going to stay. And so, okay, yes, it's going to go down in the history books and it may hurt him in 2020, but he's still going to keep doing Trump things. He's still going to keep appointing judges that I'm sure Putin has approved. He's going to continue to listen to Putin and nobody else in the intelligence community. So this is all going to stay the same. You know, so I feel like, you know, and Bob was saying the other night, like, okay, people need to take to the streets. There are people in other countries that, you know, tens of thousands show up and they are showing up. We did have some people showing up on the street last night, and it wasn't a lot. But I think part of the thing is like in those countries where there are dictators and then the people fight back, I think it's where the people have had their final, you know, last straw thing. And with Trump, it's difficult because not only does a certain amount of the, you know, population, his base, like what he does, the media still tiptoes around his behavior. And I get that they want to be cautious and they don't want to, you know, say something that isn't true. But at the same time, I think that when they use words like, you know, he's not being truthful, when he's flat out lying. I mean, I understand that sometimes you're not truthful because either you don't have the correct information. Trump fucking lies on purpose. He spreads propaganda, and more media outlets need to get stronger and bolder with how they report on him while still saying, you know, they can stay not so much cautious, but they can play it safe by not making accusations or saying things that aren't true, but by pointing out exactly what is true and doing it with a more bold kind of message instead of, you know, this timid, well, we want to be safe. And then they kind of, at least nobody's saying anymore, this is the day he became president. Thankfully that stopped, but it's still that kind of like, I don't know, timid, wanting to make sure that they don't say the wrong. It's like, this guy is a threat to our republic, a threat to our democracy, and I'm not sure what it's going
to a threat to our lives.
Our lives, yeah. And your life, because you're a brown person. I'm my life, because I'm a woman. You know, you're a tan person. It's like,
well, and the world's life, because they're giving nuclear technology secrets to the fucking Saudis.
It's all of our lives.
I'm not okay with this.
No. It's just terrifying. And so, I mean, I really don't know. And I don't know when it's going to be 10,000 people in the street. I don't know when. Like, I don't know what the straw will be, if there will ever be a straw, because the more that this goes on, it's not, I mean, it's normalization in that when there's nobody holding him truly accountable outside of, you know, I mean, because deep state coup shit's coming up, which, by the way, Bob said at the very, very beginning of his presidency, he's like, look out for the deep state coup. And here we are. You know, it's like every day that goes by and nobody's holding him accountable, we're starting to get used to it. It's not that I think any of us feels that this is normal, but it's like, what can we do?
I don't know. Yeah, we are getting used to it when yesterday's news was the four things I just talked about.
Yes, exactly. And then I forgot about all of them until you brought them up.
Right. And so I talk about this. We can't get tired. We talked about this with John Pavlovitz, remember?
Yeah.
This was at the beginning, Kimberly. We were 6 months in to this regime and we were exhausted and beaten down. And we have to remember people of color, people who have been marginalized through the civil rights movement, who are now being re-marginalized because we never got, it never got equal. Okay, we never have seen true equality. You know, anti-Semitism is on a rise. You know, people of color, people who are poor, who are just being completely disenfranchised at every turn because nobody gives a shit. I believe that when Trump came into office, that poor people would become an endangered group. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yes. Because there are no systems in place to help them rise up or to hear what they feel or to empower them with a vote. Instead, that stuff's being taken away. Women, you know, we have a sexual predator in office. We are being constantly pushed to the side and told that our opinions don't matter and that we're not equal and that we're not people. Same for people of color. And so I have to remember and I have to channel the great Barbara Lee, who stood before me and said, when you get tired and when you start feeling like this stuff is normal or that you can't go on another day, remember what my struggles were. And she didn't say it in a haughty or an arrogant or a you have to, you know, bow down to me. It's like, listen, I've been through the ringer. I've seen what it's like. I've seen the struggle firsthand, and I now represent a city that wouldn't sell my Black mother and father a home. So keep that. We have to persevere. We have to remember that the only way we are going to come out of this is if we keep talking about it and we keep taking to the streets and we keep spending our goddamn money, our resources, and our emotional energy fighting this man and all of the assholes who follow him. And all of the people in his administration who are complicit.
Exactly, okay? Exactly.
Because the crimes are not okay.
No.
This is not who we are. Thank God.
Oh, man. Well, we'll see what happens. When is it, Bob? It's end of next week? Is that what you said?
Sometime next week.
Sometime next week. All right. So sometime next week, we're going to find out. We'll just see what happens. Is it going to be the end of the world as we know it?
I don't feel fine.
No, exactly.
I don't feel fine, but not feeling fine is motivating me.
That's true.
I
always say that. It's like when you're comfortable, you don't do anything. So when you're not comfortable, that's when, and we'll see, maybe people will take to the streets depending on how this all unfolds. We'll see. We'll just have to see. But let me just go back because we're going to have to wrap in a minute.
Benicio.
So my girlfriend suggests that we go to his house before we go see the band. And I'm like, no. Of course, twist my arm. There we are. And it was so funny because I do believe he lived there. And it was an apartment building. And I'm not positive about it, but I think so because I said to her, it was somewhere in West Hollywood. And I said, you know, we're never going to find a parking space. And he probably lives in one of those, you know, buildings with, you know, a door person and we're never going to get through. So oddly enough, we show up and there's like this pizza guy just leaves and there's a parking space. So we get a parking space and the door to the building was open, even though it was, you know, you needed some kind of code to get in. The door was open and the doorman was off flirting with somebody somewhere. So we just like walk right in and I go to look up his name. And I noticed without noticing, I noticed it later that it only went up to the fourth floor, but there were five floors.
So
when we were attempting to go, because I had his apartment number, which I guess was on the fifth floor, but they didn't show you anything from the fifth floor. And I saw some guy from TV walking his dog. He wasn't like a known star, but if you saw him, you'd recognize him. So I just kind of think that celebrities lived in that building. So anyway, we go, I'm with my girlfriend. She's like 10 years older than me. And I'm like, I don't know, at the time in my late 30s. And we're trying to figure out the plan. You know, what's the plan? Well, if we knock on his door, what are we going to say? Because, of course, in my mind, I was convinced that he would see me. And then he would be like, oh, my God, you're my long lost love. And we're going to be together forever in my stupid, you know, dumb young mind. And so my girlfriend felt so awkward. She's like, well, I'm just going to be on the phone. And like as if her being on the phone would look normal. And, you know, we fucking got I don't even remember if we had a plan, but we got up to the door and we knocked on the door. And thank God nobody answered. And it was funny because the next day I read an article that he was like at that time he was in China. So for all I know, I did knock on Benicio del Toro's door. And I can you imagine if he was there and he opened it? I would have just stood there like a fucking idiot.
I don't even know
what I would have said to him. Hi.
Yeah, exactly.
What a dumbass.
You know what? We've all done dumb things.
But it was kind
things.
Of like more about the adventure than like really meeting him. You know, sometimes, you know, when I was younger, somebody gave me the address of, oh God, what's his name? The guy who was in Pump Up the Volume. What's his name?
No idea.
You know, he was in Heather's. Christian Slater.
I had
a crush on him too. And so somebody gave me his, what they thought was his address. And my girlfriend and I would go, you know, driving around and trying to find his house. And I mean, we didn't necessarily stalk him. We just wanted to see what his house looked like. And, but you know, I mean, it was really more about the adventure of doing it than ever meeting the celebrity themselves. So it was just fun. You know, it's just a funny story. And I remember I called my mom when we were at Benicio's and I'm like, we need an excuse. We need an excuse to be. My mom's like, why are you calling me? I'm like, because we're insane and we can't think of anything. And I don't even know what dumb thing she said, but she just told me I was an idiot and laughed at me. But that was just kind of funny. I used to be so in love with him. And then it was funny, too, because people would come up to me when they knew I liked him. They're like, oh my God, I was just on a hike and I saw Benicio. Or, you know, I knew that he went to this one restaurant. Oh God, I can't think of the name of it, but it's something, it's like a famous spot in LA, Dan Tanis. That's what it's called. And
oh,
I guess
yeah.
he goes there all the time. And so I went there once and I hoped to see him. And of course he wasn't there. And the bartender told me, oh, he left a few hours ago or whatever it was. So we missed him. So I never did get to see Benicio, but that's okay. I like him as an actor and that's all. I no longer have a crush on him, but I think he's fucking amazing.
He's amazing.
And you know what?
He's amazing.
I would really like to see him do more roles like he did in the Dannemora because, you know, I mean, he did the Wolfman and he did, which I saw. And then he also did, oh God, I can never remember the name of that movie. It was with Kevin Spacey, Usual Suspects. And in
yes.
the Usual Suspects, he had some kind of like...
That's where I first heard of him.
Yeah, me too. And he had a speech impediment. And so it was like kind of weird because he just sounded so weird. I liked this because he just played a guy. I mean, he played a fucking asshole and a murderer, but he was just, I mean, normal in that he didn't have any weird affectations or weird, you know, speaking issues. He was just a man. And he makes such interesting choices. You mm-hmm. know, he's got such a different point of view. So I really love to watch him perform. And I prefer it to be without all the extras, you know, like I like it when he's just playing somebody who's kind of straightforward.
What I love about him is he is whoever he's playing.
Yes.
And his roles are so varied that, you know, it's special. Like he creeped me out in Guardians of the Galaxy, but I was like, I'm going to honor this because it's freaking Benicio del Toro with dyed white hair and he's disgusting. Yeah. And then I see, did you see him in Traffic?
Yes. Love.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Okay. When he goes in to the gay bar and tries to like bring people into whatever case he's trying to crack. It's, you know, they're fighting drug trafficking,
yeah.
obviously. And he's got on that pink polo shirt and he does this move that it reminds me of Jodie Foster when she was in The Accused. Huh. And she, anyway, he's brilliant. Like Jodie Foster's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta turn my son onto that. My little cinematic loving son, because that movie is nails.
Yeah.
On every, and it's got everybody's in it.
Yeah. It's really, 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 really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
And I've only seen it once and it was very long ago. So it's time to watch it again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess there was a few other things that we didn't get to, but that's fine because we had that breaking news and we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I want to do one last little thing and it's a total non sequitur, but I want to give a shout out to the Oakland Unified School District teachers who are striking tomorrow.
Oh,
They work their balls off for not enough pay with class sizes that are way too big. And I just want to say, I'm bringing you coffee and donuts tomorrow and I'm you are appreciated and you will persevere.
Yeah.
That's that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Anyhow.
All right. Well, then, cool. The next, I guess, March 6th, you said we're going to talk to Glenn Kirshner. So,
Glennie.
Yeah. So we'll be looking forward. And like I said to everybody, just stay tuned. April, we're going to do 4 shows per month. So I got to get my shit together and finish what I've started with my learning. So anyway, we will see you next time.
Yes, indeedy.
Bye, Stephanie.
Bye. This thing, color, color, big right.